across the galaxy. This is where conspiracy on the wild side meets the perspective of a lifetime. This is the Free Zone with your host, Freeman.
Hello and welcome to the Free Zone. Well, yeah, life is crazy. Medical tyranny, Republican collapse, world war on the fringe, everything coming at us. It's hard to feel any way but distressed. But we have to get through all of that. We have to find our way through this madness. This madness was placed here for us. I don't know if you guys have really realized that I've never been here to save the world. That hasn't been my goal. My goal has always been to prepare you for the end of the world, and more likely to prepare you for the beginning of the new world, so that we could see where everything is possible, everything can go, and in the spirit of the true humanity, what life could be like. So we're going to delve into our world today with Robert Phoenix as we try to discover, is there intelligent life on planet Earth and beyond? No, that won't really be the focus. But yet, life on planet Earth does seem quite alien. And if it was an alien invasion right now, I would believe it. So everything that's going on is insane. And we have to find our sanity, hold to our truth, hold to our purpose and our beings, and understand that this is a rising phoenix. This is a way out. This is our escape hatch. It's all right in front of us. So don't get lost in the despair that is being placed upon us, because this transition has to happen. And no one knows more about transitions than Robert Phoenix. He's been a working astrologer all this time, special guest on our show often. He exploded on the scene with his disruptive robertphoenix.com and has been bringing in all of his expertise in astrology, understanding mythology, Carl Jung, Joseph Campbell, William Blake, bringing it all out to you. And each time he gathers more and more in this multidisciplinary approach, and he loves to bring it out to all of you. So thank you, Robert. And folks, please welcome Robert Phoenix to the Free Zone. Hey, Robert.
Freeman, it's great to be back. I always enjoy hanging out with you and jamming these these wavelengths with you. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, you are so welcome. Well, this is going to be a fantastic ride as we explore life in the 21st century. My God, it's hard to even know how many different places are going on. Well, it sounds like rock and roll going on in the background there. As we start to figure out what is going on planet Earth, as we see the manipulation of life on planet Earth, I've been trying to focus on the bigger picture. And you see, I don't believe the big picture is simply to come in and cull the population and bring about this new world order. There's a higher vibration that has been the new world order, the black magic of all of this that has been involved in all of this. There's a bigger picture than just global conquest. And as we start to look at this puzzle and where we're at in time and how this all is shifting, what do you see just as we start to kind of unfold the big picture and start to realize what's just, our current situation?
So why don't we start with, like, where we are as a country? I mean, I'm specifically talking about the United States. Yes. And I can bring some astrological data points in here. When Trump was president in 2020, the true node went into the sign of Gemini. And the nodes are very important. They're the ascending and descending planet of the moon. And you can set astrology like clockwork with the true. There are mundane events with the nodes that always, like, kind of, how do I say this, can help in decoding reality. So I'm going to go back and give you a couple of examples as to how this works in a very kind of black and white sort of way. Okay, so we're going to go back to when the true node was in the sign of let's see, Leo, right? When the true node was in Leo and the south node was in Aquarius, that was a time when Joe Rogan was rising, right? Joe Rogan happens to be a Leo. That was a time when Alex Jones was descending, and Alex Jones is an Aquarius. And what's interesting about Rogan and Jones is that they are born precisely a half a year apart. So they are exact astrological opposites. Joe Rogan is born August 11th, and Alex Jones is born February 11th. So they're exact opposites. And when these nodes were happening, you can see Rogan rising, right? The true node, which is the ascending planet of the moon, was basically in his favor. And the south node, which is the descending plane, was not in Jones's favor at all. So he was in descent and Rogan was rising. And we can see that with the nodes. That was happening. Then we can move forward, right? We could put the true node in the sign of Cancer, which would be the next kind of nodal expression because the nodes move backwards. And when the true node was in Cancer, there was this very intense kind of clustering and this cocooning effect, right? So you're a Cancer. So when the true node was in Cancer for you, or just in general for you, that's probably when you were really, you know, moving into your place in Greenville and putting your roots down and kind of just being like a homeowner, right? You were cocooning. So that was something that was intrinsic to your chart, but we were all starting to begin to do that as well. And when COVID theoretically really kicked in, the true node was in the early degrees of Cancer. So that was around, like, again, March 13th, right? That's when it was really March 11th when the NBA season stopped. And then Trump on March 13th creates this executive order, which we'll talk about. It's a very important executive order. And it's like, okay, you're going to be home 2 weeks to stop the spread. Like, that's when the true node was in Cancer. And the south node at that time was in Capricorn. So what were people doing? They were moving away from their corporate gigs. That's Capricorn. They were back home. They were working from home. They were spending time with their family. And that 2 weeks was kind of a nice little respite. Like, people didn't have to commute. They were signing off on, hey, this is great. I can work from home. I can day drink while I'm at home. And the kids were at home. It was kind of that very Cancerian sort of vibe. It was very Cancerian, very homey. And I remember when the NFL draft took place, I think the true node was around maybe two or three Cancer. And they didn't do it in a public place, which is normally when they do it or how they do it. They were doing the draft at home. And so you had these general managers who were basically on the network equivalent of Zoom, and they're making picks for their team, and you can see their kids and you can see their dog. So it was very Cancerian. It was like, this is what the true node in Cancer looks like, right? At its kind of most potent expression. And then boom, the true node moves into Gemini shortly thereafter, and everything moves into polarity, duality. This executive order that Trump signs on March 13th essentially puts FEMA in charge of the country. And I don't think that's changed, by the way. I don't think Biden is not running the country. I think a lot of people, you know, could co-sign on that. And I don't even think Trump was running the country at that point. So once he did that, he basically said, I'm going to let the individual states run their own program as it relates to COVID-19. And on the surface, it sounds smart, right? Like, if you're a state that is like Wyoming, like, why would you have theoretically the same kinds of safeguards or the same kinds of, you know, demands as, say, New York would? You wouldn't. It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of approach to a so-called pandemic. So on one level, that made sense. On another level, what it did is it decoupled us. Like, we have not been the United States since then. And they've used this now to balkanize our experience. And even after that, when the True Note went into Gemini, and then you had the whole George Floyd episode happen, like Trump was handcuffed. A lot of people thought that, well, he could just go in and he could, you know, 14th Amendment this thing, like Kennedy did with George Wallace in Alabama, and sending the National Guard to make sure that those kids could go to the University of Alabama. I mean, theoretically, when your civil rights are in jeopardy, you can use the 14th Amendment. But technically, he couldn't, because we weren't the United States anymore. So what happened? Well, you have these places like Portland and Seattle and Minneapolis and Chicago. They were allowing America to burn. And it was creating more division, more of this fractious divide. And a lot of that was kind of lining up along sort of racial lines. And I think they were really hoping to promote a race war so that they could get their purple revolution kind of across the finish line. That didn't happen, right? Americans, I think, are smarter than people give them credit for. They weren't taking the bait. You didn't see people going out and saying, you know, F these people. I'm going to go, you know, catch me a couple of whatevers, right? And I'm going to string them up. That didn't happen. They tried to make it happen. They tried to bring out Juicy Smollett and his fake news story. They tried to bring out Bubba Wallace and his fake news story. They just weren't biting, right? So this polarity that they were trying to incite didn't really have enough traction. So now they've gone to this next version of polarity, which is the vaxxed and the unvaxxed, because they want to create this division amongst people. And Freeman, that's an energetic thing, right? That's the big picture of the energetic story. Because if they have this polaric and dualistic kind of energy, it fits into a lot of these Freemasonic motifs that you're familiar with, which is the black and white checkerboard floor and the chessboard, and that whole polarity and duality magic can be used to kind of move people around, create more chaos. But now I think they really want to, like today they had this guy, I don't know if you've been following it, but today they had this guy who showed up in Washington, D.C. with a truck with explosives. Yeah. And he's got, yeah, like who didn't see that coming? I even freaking tweeted about that 2 days ago. I got the location. I thought it was going to be like in a vac center or a hospital, but I knew it would have to do with a bomb. Who couldn't see that coming, right? So now it's like he's got all the hallmarks. He talks like a redneck. He looks like a white supremacist.
Sitting back waiting for the Q army to show up.
Yeah, I mean, so if the people are hip to this, right? They know what they try to do is they try to harvest energy from this thing. That's what they try to do. They're trying to harvest energy so that they can continue to, like, fuel their major psychological operation. Now, here's what I think the big picture is. And we talked about this, that everything that goes along with COVID is about culling the herd for an extinction level event, which we can talk about. But I think the big picture has to do with this graphene oxide. Mm-hmm. And the graphene oxide. So a long time ago, I read this book that George Green put out called Handbook for a New Paradigm.
That's how my show started. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know that. No. Yeah. No.
Two things I want to throw in before we get to George. One, yes, continuity of government. When we went into a state of emergency, and I shared this video last week of General O'Shaughnessy coming up from the deep underground base in Cheyenne Mountain, he technically was president at that moment because of continuity of government during a state of emergency. General O'Shaughnessy was in charge at that moment. That's why he was the one giving the broadcast from the deep underground base. But in the midst of all of this, maybe as Gemini came in, he resigned right in the middle of this crisis. And General Van Herk, who was a member of the 509th bombing wing, that's the ones that investigated the flying saucer crash at Roswell, by the way, he took over for General O'Shaughnessy. So as these things start to fall apart, people are looking for President Harris and Vice President Pelosi, and they're thinking something like that. So I believe it will be President Glenn D. Van Herk that takes over in this continuity of government as this thing settles in. And so I just wanted to put that in everyone's ear, President Van Herk. So when that name starts to come up more, you'll start to realize what's going on. George Green, yes, Handbook for a New Paradigm. Very strange book. I couldn't quite vibe with it, but I was always following like Barbara Han Clow and Barbara Marciniak and the Palladian vibe, back in the 90s, and then of course the Celestine Prophecies and things. So, here I was in Austin, Texas. I learned of Alex Jones and said, man, I need to meet this guy. And of course, the address he gives is not true, especially back then. I don't know. Probably more so now. But anyway, I couldn't find the guy, right? I didn't know of Alex Jones. This was 2004 when I was there. And I just heard him on the radio. I was like, oh, man, I got to meet this guy. And then it turns out I had been familiarized with like Bohemian Grove and things like that. And I started to put the pieces together. And I met this homeless guy and he says, hey, you got to go to this meeting at the mall and listen to this lecture. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I have nothing to do. I live in my van. So I go to the mall. I walk in and I suddenly see everyone that I had met in Austin, Texas. And this was a big shock for me. I'd only met a few people. I'd only been there for a few days. And yet they were all there and they all knew each other. I had met them separately. So this was a weird synchronicity for me right there. Then George Green comes on, tells his story of being an ex-Bilderberger, ex-financial advisor to Jimmy Carter, and how he can make $1 billion out of thin air. And then he started to show us how the Palladian anti-gravity crafts work and how the magnetic forces worked and all of that. And he of course, gave us all free copies of Handbook for a New Paradigm because he was publishing this for the Palladians, or I guess as they were known then as the Plagiarans. And so I'm out on a break during this whole conference. He takes a little break. I mean, it's not a conference. It's just George Green in a mall. And I go out into the outside with everybody, have a little smoke break. And I start telling them, people get confused when I tell this story because I literally pretended to be a Palladian, right? I kind of look like the Palladians. I've always followed the Palladian philosophy. I've always felt like I was a Palladian. And as you wander the earth like I did as a nomad, you can play games in your mind like this. You can be an angel. You could be an alien. You could be whatever you want because you're just constantly on the move. But it's not lying, right? Like, so some people have tried to call me out as like, oh my God, Freeman stood in front of a group of people and lied about who he was. No, I just kind of played a character. I never lied. But I told them the truth about what I saw in the rituals of military activities. I talked about Saddam Hussein claiming to be Nebuchadnezzar reincarnated and how they used the shock and awe, the Shekinah attack on him. How I told the secret history of planet Earth and the ancient stories of Planet X. And I told how I predicted 9/11 and how all that worked out and all of this. And as I'm sitting there just spouting this randomly out to the crowd, a couple, 10, 30, 40 people or whatever, this guy comes storming over, like this really tall blonde guy, like a Nordic alien or something, but he comes storming over. But I could see he had a big smile on his face, so he didn't freak me out. And he's like, you need a TV show. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, would you do it? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you mean? And he's like, well, there's Austin Access Television. I want to get you on there. So if you'll do it, I'll write you a check right now. And I was living in my van on Christmas Light Streets in Austin, Texas, only planning to be there for the week. And so I sat there in about 5 minutes. I had to come up with a yes sir or no. And maybe it was less, but I sat there and I pondered all the things that I would have to go through. Do I want to make myself public? Do I want to go out into the world and tell everybody these dark secrets that I know? Do I want to slap Satan in the face publicly and let everybody see my face doing it, on television? But there was no YouTube. There was no Google Video. None of that existed. The World Wide Web was in its infancy. Basically, it's still, you couldn't Google image search things. That didn't exist. Stuff like that. None of that existed yet. So you know, access television was it. Like, that was YouTube before YouTube. And so in those few seconds of you know, calculating all of that in my head, I finally said, all right, let's do it. And he wrote me a check right there. And I took that check down to Austin Access. I signed up for my television show, and the rest is history.
Well, there you go. George Green, a catalyst in time and space for your launch, right? That's pretty cool. That's a cool story.
It was really wild.
So I ran across George for the first time in 1990. And it was in Olympia, Washington. I was living there. And he had a, I saw an ad that he was appearing at this hotel and giving a lecture. And I was really interested to hear what he had to say. By that time, I'd seen Bill Cooper give a lecture at Evergreen College of all places. And that's when Behold a Pale Horse just came out. And Cooper was, for me, always kind of a dodgy character. And a lot of people want to pin this kind of saint-like status on Bill Cooper for, you know, his dogged work with unveiling the truth and being a patriot. Bill Cooper was not a great guy. He was a big drinker. He had an alcohol problem. He could be really abusive. That doesn't necessarily mean that he didn't have an idea or was not able to alert people, but he was, you know, he had some issues. Anyway, I saw Cooper. I got a copy of Behold the Pale. I was just kind of going through this massive opening. It was all brought on by the Gulf War. So George Green shows up in town and starts, you know, telling his story and everything about, you know, how he, you know, got involved with the Carter administration. So for people that aren't familiar with George's story, he's the son of a cattle family from Colorado, big time cattle family. And they recruited him to be part of the Carter administration. He saw what was going on the inside and, you know, quickly exited as fast as possible. But he continued to evolve along a certain line and met, you know, particular people. And he got involved with this group from, I think it was from Montana, weren't they? And they were publishing this newsletter. And it was this woman who was doing these transmissions of a Pleiadian commander named Hatton. So I picked up a number of these newsletters at that event that George was at. And it's really fascinating stuff. I think Bo Greitz was involved with this group or something like that. And that was my first introduction with George. And he talked about replacements. He talked about clones. He talked about doubles. And that was something I was really interested in because I was convinced that George Bush had been replaced. And I had absolutely no proof of that, but I was intensely watching a lot of the Gulf War stuff. So this was just kind of post-Gulf War. And there was a time when the Gulf War stuff was happening when Bush was like huge, right? You could just read his energy signature, and this guy's energy signature was massive. And then there was this weird period where I swear to God, he was somebody else. And he was coming down like a gangplank from a plane somewhere in the Middle East. And he looked like he was in a trance. And he stuck his hand out as he was going down the gangplank before he even hit the bottom of the gangplank. It was like so robotic. I'm like, what's going on with George Bush? This does not seem like the same guy. And when he talked, he did not convey the same kind of energy. So when I went to go see George Green, and he's talking about this, I asked him, I said, what happened to Bush? This doesn't seem like the same Bush. And he says, no, it's not. The original Bush was replaced about 5 weeks ago or something like that. And that's right around the time when I saw this change in Bush. I'm like, okay, this guy's really onto something. Because he's verifying something that I've witnessed. And then after that, I think a little bit later on, I was moving back to California, and I was driving down from Olympia to California. We were in Portland. We were out somewhere in Oregon. I was with my girlfriend, and we were listening to Art Bell. And this was like pre-Dreamland Art Bell. And he was, people don't know this about Art Bell, but he was kind of a conservative late night talk show host before he got into all the paranormal and esoteric stuff. And he was talking about Bush collapsing in his food in Japan. It's a kind of a famous moment where he's there and he just goes face down into the food. And my girlfriend and I looked at each other, and at the same time we said, the clone, you know, gave out, right? The clone died, or the clone collapsed. And I think that's exactly what happened. You know, even though Bush probably had a very, you know, intense heroin habit, if you believe Kathy O'Brien, and that could be a possibility that he could have just nodded out. But based on all everything that we've been kind of reading about him, or at least the validation that George Green gave me, I just think the clone collapsed over there. So I didn't have a lot of contact with George Green after that, but I ran across Handbook for a New Paradigm at a bookstore. God, no, somebody sent it to me. I was at Mondo 2000, and somebody sent it in the mail to review, and I started to read it. And then I became kind of displaced, and I was traveling around Northern California, living in my car and stuff. But I was really intensely glued to this book. And one of the things that really grabbed me about this book was this idea that they would try to create a negative universe, right? That they would try to create a universe based on antimatter. And in that way, they would usurp God, because that's what they wanted to do. They being, you know, the archons, or, you know, whatever kind of term you want to use here. But that they were like, okay, we're going to usurp God. We're going to create our own universe. And we're going to do that through antimatter. And they were clear in this book that they were not capable of doing that. So this brings us into graphene oxide. Now, graphene oxide, if it is in the jab, to me, this would be how they would want to create the universe of antimatter. That it would actually be an organic portal in the individuals that have graphene oxide in them. So the individual would be the incubator for the antimatter universe. And I think that there's a possibility for that, right? That they would actually use a biological creation to create something that was like anti-biological. And I think graphene oxide could pass that test, that it could create a black hole or a portal within the people who have ingested or have been injected with the vaccine. So that's what I think part of the role of graphene oxide could play here, because it kind of dovetails with George Green's vision of the anti-universe.
And I have concurred with this, and graphene oxide is capable of transmitting messages, electronic transmissions out of your body from your nerves, and will transmit before you even know that you're going to do it, because the nerve has already sent the signal before your action actually happens. This has set up a situation where it definitely, okay, so take in Serge Manast. Most people think of Project Bluebeam as this fake alien invasion, but that's not exactly what he said. He said that this will be used, that Bluebeam is the ability to transmit these archonic energies into your soul using fiber optics and other electronics in that way. So the bioconvergence is what we're up against here. And yeah, I know I had one more point there, but it's based on me. But I do want to also add about the antimatter that CERN has just announced that they found the charm, all right, the magical spell, the charm, meson, which fluctuates between matter and antimatter. And this is a huge deal, but of course the world isn't bothering to pay attention to the, you know, what CERN is pumping out. But yet the charm meson, folks, charm, you know, like a magic charm, mm-hmm. is the is the antimatter-matter convergence. So I wanted to throw in one more thing on top of all of this, and that is that, I've rarely, when I was doing the TV show back in the very beginning, no one ever came on for the topics I thought they were going to come on for. So I just thought this was kind of a funny coincidence in all of this, and a little inside story to the Freeman Perspective television show. So every time I would have a guest on, I would expect to be talking about certain things, but then they always had something else in mind. And I'm like, okay, well, it turns out I got Scott Stevens on, right? And I had him on during Chemtrails Week. Now, if we add chemtrails to this puzzle as well, that's a whole nother thing. But I had Scott Stevens, host of Weather Wars, you know, first meteorologist to come out about chemtrails and all of that back in 2005, 2006, when, there was nobody talking about this. And so here I am, really excited to finally get Scott Stevens on the show. And he starts making all these really strange extraterrestrial statements. And they all sound very familiar to me. And I'm trying to figure out what he's talking about because, you know, my notes are out the window now. And it turns out he's quoting the Handbook for a New Paradigm instead of talking about chemtrails. So, you know, Scott Stevens of Weather Wars was heavily affected by Handbook for a New Paradigm as well back in 2006 when I had him on the program, and he wouldn't talk about chemtrails. He wanted to talk about this, you know, Handbook.
Wow.
It was one of the most important things to him.
Wow. That's a trip. You know, there were a number of other books that came out in that series. I don't know how many. I think there's at least a dozen, maybe more. And I never read any of the other books that came out of that. But that one book really grabbed me. And so the other concept in that book that really grabbed me, besides the fact that they're trying to, you know, create this inverted universe. And think about really what we're doing here. Like we have all this inversion going on. That's the other thing, right? We're having all this symbolic and cultural inversion, which is kind of like this manifestation of antimatter, like ugly is beautiful, weak is strong. You just go down the list, right?
Male is female, yes.
Exactly. We're living in this inverted universe. Virtue is a vice, you know? That kind of a thing. So they're again, it's energetically kind of setting the stage for this inversion. But the other thing that came through that book that I thought was really interesting and has really spoken to me is this idea of God. So like, what is God? God is engaged in the act of novelty and creation and knowing itself, right? So God is much more invested in a creative universe, in a creative individual, in an individual that has imagination, because it gets to experience its complexity through that kind of approach and manifestation. So this idea of God will invest in those kinds of things more enthusiastically, theoretically, than the darker version. Now, this is an interesting point that the Handbook for the New Paradigm kind of gets into, is that God will also learn from this other expression, right? It will also learn and experience itself through this darker expression. But there's a limit to it, because ultimately that's a cul-de-sac, and it can only learn theoretically so much. Right, so it will ultimately drop the hammer on that experience at some point. What that point is, I don't know. I don't think George knew, and I don't think anybody who was channeling that knew. But to me, that was a really interesting take on what this idea of God is invested in. And it was a very holistic take to me. So if you're imaginative and creative, and you're a builder, like, this is creation that's really kind of egging you on and is on your side.
Absolutely. Yes. It, imagination creates the universe. And you got me thinking about the fact that Google is doing a lot of its limitations in its searches because they want to limit the information that gets into the AI. Just mm-hmm. as when they made Twitter bot and all of the Q or the 4chan people came on and started teaching it to be a xenophobe. They had to shut the Twitter bot down because it started sounding like Hitler. And so now they're attempting to limit the information that AI can receive in order to not allow it to become evil. So that's kind of like the opposite side of what you're saying with God. You know, we have to limit the information that goes into AI so that it doesn't develop some sort of psychotic complex, which they all seem to do.
It's a really interesting point. I've had this discussion with some other people, and Google could theoretically be doing that. And yes, it makes total sense, but there are, you know, if we're looking at like a machine model version of the universe or a machine model version of reality that a particular AI might be engaged in, there's just so many data inputs that it'd be really, really hard for the people that, you know, want to control the AI to limit that, right? It would just be very hard because there'd be so many ways in which it would receive some form of data and input. And it could be psychotic. It could create a split in the Frankenstein monster, the golem that they want to create. And it could be out of control and may not always operate in their best interest either as a result of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I remembered the other thing I wanted to bring up with the graphene oxide, and that was patent WO2020060606 by Microsoft, which creates a body activity cryptocurrency. So you need something in your body, folks, to transmit these bodily activities to the computer so that you can earn your cryptocurrency from it. So yeah, patent 060606, they just love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're so obvious. It's like a bad James Bond movie.
It really is. We're in a comic book version of James Bond here.
Total comic book version of James Bond. You've got the requisite Bond villain with Klaus Schwab. I mean, it's surreal. I mean, sometimes you have to step back and just kind of laugh at it.
Oh, yeah, I have been. I really have.
It's so surreal.
It really is. And, you know, that's what makes it amazing and wonderful. You know, it's hard for anyone to hear those words in 2021. But I know that it's going to take an event such as this to really shake people out of their comatose and start to move into being human again.
I agree. And I think it's happening.
I agree.
I think it's happening. I think that, I spend a lot of time, probably too much time on Twitter. But Twitter is kind of like the central nervous system of the internet. And I think you can get a really good pulse of things with Twitter. Now, I know that there's like commie Twitter and woke Twitter, right? I mean, if you have a feed and you're in that feed, you're going to get that feedback loop. I have some of those people on my Twitter just because I want to see what they're talking about.
Exactly.
But, you know, my Twitter feed tends to be more in alignment with people that I want to support. And the messaging and the information that's coming through my feed is really powerful. Like, it's really, really powerful. There are a whole series of people that were addressing the city council in San Diego this past week. And it was like a whole nother level of people articulating their rights, articulating what's going on with the so-called virus. There was one guy, I don't know if you saw him, you would have loved this guy. He looked like somebody that would hang out at the Rainbow Gathering. And he's this big kind of, you know, burly dreadlock guy. And this guy was just spitting fire. I mean, my God, the fury and the intensity and the focus, righteous indignation was freaking epic with this guy. Like, this is just like next level stuff, right?
He's actually going to be on InfoWars here in the next day, I think.
Okay, so you know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're calling him Dreaded Alex Jones, or the Dreadhead Alex Jones. And he was screaming about the Nuremberg violations that were going on.
Yeah, so this guy, I guarantee he's probably from OB. He's just got an OB vibe, Ocean Beach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, normally that guy's out hanging out on the beach, probably smoking a spliff and, you know.
I have a friend in OB that's making anti-gravity technology, so.
There's some people in OB that are very smart. Don't get me wrong, but this guy's probably pretty smart too. Right. But given the recreational activity in OB, I think that's probably close to the top of the list there.
Yes. But, okay.
He wasn't the only one. He was not the only one. There were some women there who were so smart. And it's just the beginning, right? It's just the beginning. And we could talk, go back to your thought. We could talk about the Age of Aquarius, and this is where the Age of Aquarius comes into the discussion.
It's kind of off topic, but as you brought up the Dreddy Alex Jones, one of my main concerns here, as I've been looking at this thing politically for, you know, decades now, I had continually said that what they need is the American Nuremberg trials. So my point is that there's always a double-edged sword here. Yes, everybody is calling for vengeance and justice and wants Fauci and Gates in prison. And my question always is, who's going to be the authority that oversees this? And that I have been saying over and over again for decades now, almost on every program that I'm asked to be on, you know, other than mine, I bring up this, the need for an American Nuremberg trial as part of the New World Order plan. And we can see clearly what's happening as the Taliban says, don't talk to us about censorship when you censor your own president. Go talk to Facebook. When the head of China says, you know, don't talk to me about social violations when you're beating up black people in your streets within, you know, and so the moral high ground of America had to be crushed. And for me, that began with them bringing Bill Clinton on the television and asking him about inserting a cigar into his secretary's vagina, because you don't do that sort of thing. That's bad for national security, national health, everything. You know, you just don't do it.
Well, so, it's a bad look for a president too, right?
Right.
You just don't want your president to have to get up there and defend that he stuck a cigar in Lewinsky's yoni.
Yes, exactly. So to me, that was like, wait, this is a plan, and the inevitable outcome of this plan will be an American style Nuremberg trials. And that, you know, that's when they'll separate America, destroy it in this final. So when I see all the truthers coming out saying, we need this Nuremberg trial, we need this, I'm always like, guys, I've been trying to tell you that's part of the plan. Like, this is part of the downfall that's needed. You know, it's, you know, the Nazis didn't lose. They were brought into Nuremberg and then they were dispersed to NASA and IBM and, you know, Raytheon and everywhere else, the CIA. You know, it wasn't like the Nazis lost. They just got sent off to all these other places. And now we're dealing with the consequences of that. So anyway, just because Dreddy, I didn't mean to dispel the idea that people are standing up. It's just, it's a double-edged sword and we got to be careful. And I always say that instead of heading for vengeance or justice, quit looking to the past. Let's start moving towards the future.
Well, I think it's a really good point. And there are a couple things that I want to add on top of what you're saying. It has to do with this whole Nuremberg thing. So first of all, the Russians got a fair share of the Germans too. That's everybody thinks that it was just the Americans that got the creme de la creme of the Third Reich. No, the Russians got some too. If you look into that, they were kind of dispersed between Russia and the United States because Russia has its own major uptick in technology at the same time. So to be fair, they decided to spread the brain trust across both of these so-called Axis powers, which are really more in league with each other than not. But let's talk about the Nuremberg trials for a second. Now, I have a theory, and it may not necessarily be one that's popular or one that a lot of people will share with me, but I think that the narrative about the Holocaust is skewed. I don't think it happened that the way history books have written it. I don't think that the numbers of people that died in the Holocaust add up. If you do some basic math and figure it out, the story doesn't hold. Now, what really happened in the Holocaust, that's up for debate. I'm not going to get into it. Clearly, there were people that died. So now you're basing the Nuremberg trials on a particular story. And that story may or may not even be true. There may be elements of that story that are true, but it may not be the whole story. So now you've got this theoretical event based on another event, which may or may not be the complete or totality of that picture. So what does that mean? And then to your point, who's going to preside over a Nuremberg trial? And the other thing too, is that how many times since the Nuremberg trial have our right to have informed consent been violated? I can tell you every single day, pretty much, if you drink fluoridated water, your Nuremberg rights are being violated. You're ingesting something that's theoretically a medicine. It's an additive to your water. Did you consent to that? Probably not. So our Nuremberg rights are being violated all the time. And how many other Nuremberg
chemtrails?
Chemtrails. I mean, so we can sit here and create a laundry list of Nuremberg violations.
Right.
This just being the latest one. And again, who's going to oversee that? Well, you can have somebody, the World Court.
Exactly. Is
the World Court can over. Good luck with that. You think that, hey, guess what? These people are right. You've got to shut this down. Klaus, I'm sorry. Your Great Reset is just going to have to be put on the sidelines here for a while. You think the World Court's going to do that? How about the UN? You think the UN is going to have a trial for this? No, the UN is vested in a very different model for the world. So I've asked people on Twitter, show me any case that's been adjudicated in the Nuremberg court system, anything, any kind of case finding or anything that set precedent, show it to me. Nobody's ever been able to show me anything. So I'm very dubious of this whole Nuremberg piece. I don't know. I think Reiner Fulmich might have really good intentions, but you play this thing out, it's never going to go before a world court. I wouldn't say never. I'd be really, really, really surprised.
Well, only if just America is blamed, you know, not like the globalists and not like the Klaus Schwabs of the world and things. Maybe, you know, Bill Gates and Fauci, they can go down. Nobody cares about them.
I think that would be, I think you could do that and maybe they would convene a court for something like just for that purpose.
Right.
Just for that purpose. And it could be, you know, the legal death knell to the United States. But we're hanging by a thread and we're balkanized already. So it wouldn't take a whole lot. That's a really good point, Freeman, that would be used to scuttle this idea of this country. Yep.
Yeah, that's where we're at, folks. That's the life on planet Earth at this time. But we can live up to our true potential. We can find all of our true selves in all of this. And it's a perfect opportunity for that, for the big shakeup. The great reset of our own will come about because of all of this, as long as we can stay true and stay in our houses. And I mean, not literally, I meant our astrological houses, and understand the effects that this has on us at all times and how this will affect your emotions. You know, I often use Mercury retrograde, which tends to make my listening audience angry. So we won't bring it into the puzzle. But for me, that was always one of the most obvious astrological events that showed itself pretty regularly. It was the one that kind of clued me into the validity of this all. So that's the key ingredient, is we have to stay ourselves. We have to be able to be ourselves in the midst of all of this. And it's difficult, but it's also the perfect time for it because you have nothing to lose. How about that? So Robert, you've got some things coming up here. Let's get this out here before we end this first hour. The 11th House Media with Robert Phoenix. What's going on with this event?
Yeah, so every year I have, well, for the last 2 years, I've had an event here in the Hill Country. And it's basically people coming here to Kerrville. And I think we've had roughly around 45 or 50 people for the last two events. And the idea is to basically hang out and have fun and meet people that you've had an opportunity to connect with sort of through my world. I have a group called Chatlandia and really super smart, really interesting square peg round hole people. You know, a lot, you know, very similar, in fact, some crossover with, you know, your world and the people that follow your work. So it's a way for a lot of these people to get together and meet each other in real time. I brought in guest speakers and we have a lot of fun. We do events. So last year, Masaki Miyagawa came out and he had a great presentation on pyramids around the world and the evolution of pyramids and pyramid energy. And I gave a presentation, an astrological presentation. And then Masaki played DJ on, I think on the last night. We got together, we hung out and, you know, we danced our asses off. And then I have these kind of extracurricular activities that I plan. Last year, we actually did a ritual. They have a Stonehenge here in the Hill Country. So I did this mask ritual at Stonehenge, which was kind of cool. And a demasking ritual. This year, I'll have Jay Whitener. He'll come out and he'll do a presentation. His wife, Sharon Rose, will also be here. I'm hoping Masaki will come out again. And
I think Masaki is moving.
Yeah, he's talking about going to Japan. So that all depends on the timeline. So if he's here, that'll be great. If not, I'll have another kind of musical, creative interlude. Jay, of course, is a filmmaker, and he has a film that he did called Kalki, which is about kind of this avatar, and we're going to have an airing or a showing of Kalki that'll be part of the weekend. We always have good food, Texas barbecue. So that's coming up. That's going to be on the weekend of the, let's see, it's in October.
14th so, to the 17th.
Yeah, 14th through the 17th. So people show up on the 14th, which is a Thursday night. We kick in on Friday. I do my show, The Friday Forecast. On that Friday, I've done that. So the attendees of the group are the guests. It's always a really good show. And then, so we go Friday, Saturday, Sunday's our last day, and people pack out on Monday. So there's, you know, we have rooms set aside at the hotel. And then there's a fee for the event. And it's usually somewhere between $600 to $700 for the entire weekend. And that includes food and the extracurricular activities and snacks and things like that. It also helps pay for some of the speakers and their costs, because I pick up their room and I pay them a little fee, their food, things like that. So that's happening. And by the time this airs, I should have all the details on my website and you'll be able to sign up for it.
That's on robertphoenix.com.
Yeah. And I'll also have another sign up over on 15 Minutes of Flame, which was my other website. And I do a daily live stream over there from 9 a.m. to about 10:30 a.m. Central Standard Time, where we talk about a lot of the stuff that we're talking about now.
Nice. So, folks, that's the Texas Hill Country Gathering. I always forget that you're in Kerrville. I did Kerrville Folk Festival for a while there. I loved it.
Yeah, I'm just a little north of there. I was in Fredericksburg, but it's too expensive to actually have this event in Fredericksburg, and I've done the event for 2 years now at this hotel in Kerrville called Into the Hills, and it's really clean and modest, and the staff there are fantastic. They've got a great pool. The weather is really good that time of the year, and Kerrville's closer to the airport in San Antonio if people are flying in. I think a lot of people are going to be driving this year. That's my sense.
I definitely believe that. Yeah. Well, you might need to write this down since your event's October 14th, write this down for me or think of it. Ask Jay Widener about the death of Manly P. Hall.
Okay.
See if you can't even get that recorded. I couldn't get him on film about it, but ask him about Manly P. Hall. He was very close with Manly and was there for his death, and it's a very intriguing story if you can get it out of him.
I'll have a conversation with Jay about that.
Yeah, Manly P. Hall.
Yeah, at first I went to Jay and I said, hey, you know, if you want to, you can do your Kubrick program, which is really great. I mean, it's a really great presentation. But then I came back and said, Jay, I really would love it if you did something different. Right, like if you did something new and something that really grabbed your interest. So I'm going to check in with him on that. Hopefully he can bring something new to the table because he's got such a great brain. He's got so many great resources. I'd love to see him carve out some new territory.
Yeah. Well, get that Manly P. Hall bug in his brain. I think that story needs to be told. And I don't know why he wouldn't cover it, but maybe you can find out.
Yeah.
And that pretty much covers it for this hour. We, of course, have to thank Steve Mercer. Producer Steve at FreemanTV.com is the contact. Producer Steve at FreemanTV.com. If you want to write to Steve and send us your guest suggestions, show ideas, or just send us some love, you can also write me, Freeman at FreemanTV.com. And if you have written me and I haven't written you back, please write me again. I lose emails so fast. It's ridiculous. I don't know what happens to them. I check them, I mark them, and then they're gone when I go to respond. Sorry, it sometimes takes me days to get back to them and I lose them. So if I have not written back to you, please write me again. I'm not ignoring you. I just lose them and I apologize for that. Well, I want to thank you all so much for staying strong, staying with me. You guys have been here all along. It's amazing to me. The numbers just, we stick at the same. We don't rise, we don't fall, but we're here, we're solid. And there's a really good crew here. And I want to thank you all so much. And I mean you guys. You're the good crew that keeps this show alive. And I want to thank you all for tuning in. Let everyone know that they can listen to The Free Zone on every podcast player out there. I mean, I've been on Spotify longer than Joe Rogan. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Android, Google, you name it, I'm on it, right? Everything but YouTube, right? So every time I put something on YouTube, everybody says, where have you been? I'm like, well, it's on every video. I'm at freemantv.com. I always have been, never stopped. And it saddens my heart every time I see those comments on my YouTube videos. It's like, where have you been? I'm like, every link is there. Every link is there. You can go listen to me on every other platform other than YouTube, but you just come and tell me you can't find me. FreemanTV.com is where you will find me, folks. It's been here for, 20 years, 17 years, something like that. It's always been the same. So please come on over, share it with your friends. Tell them to search on their Google platforms or their podcast platforms as to The Free Zone with Freeman Fly. It's that simple. And there I am, and there are all these great guests and hours. And I hope some of you will think about coming over and supporting our efforts, joining the crew, and become a member. And just come on over to freemantv.com, subscribe for recurring payments, and you get a free week, and you can just listen and see if you want to stick with it. Or, pay up for a year. It's the cheapest way to join in. Just sign up for a year, and you get all of this great content plus all the back catalog and everything. But please go back to my YouTube channel anyway, even though I'm not putting new videos up on the YouTube channel, and check out all the backlog information. It's all pertinent, everything. And you know so much more now that when you hear the work from back then, you're going to go, oh, now I get it. because you're a different person. So go start it all over again. Go up right back to the beginning of the Freeman Perspective television show. Check out all the lectures. Check out, I mean, I've got entire conferences there for you to go through. So you should never miss me is the point. There's plenty for you to get through. So I hope you don't just abandon my YouTube channel because I don't upload videos anymore. I hope you'll go and reintroduce yourself to those concepts and get all of that in there. And as well, get on over to robertphoenix.com. Think about this nice event there in Kerrville to go and hang out with a bunch of like-minded people and feel that true bliss that is humanity, because that's the truth about all of us. And they want us to divide, split, and in every way, shape, or form, as Robert has pointed out. And the best way we can combat this is by coming together. Let's just do it, folks. Be real, be human, be yourself. Get out there and do it. It's that simple. All right, guys, we're moving into the members section. So for the rest of you, we will see you next week.